The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello and welcome to The Profile. This is Premier Christian Radio and I'm Emma Fowle. The Profile is the show where we sit down with a well-known Christian to hear more about their life, their faith and their ministry. It is brought to you in association with the UK's leading Christian magazine, Premier Christianity. The monthly title features more interviews just like this one, as well as all of the latest news, reviews, columnists and much more. Head over to premierchristianity.com/podcast for your exclusive half-price subscription offer. Today on the show, I am joined by actor and musician Sean Escoffrey. Sean is a West End veteran, having played Mufasa in The Lion King for over 16 years. He's also a soul and R&B artist who has recorded 6 critically acclaimed solo albums and sung with stars including Beverly Knight, Angie Stone and Erykah Badu, as well as touring with Michael Ball and Alfie Beau. On today's podcast, he shares his story of getting into the creative arts industry via his old school friend Idris Elba, how his Christian faith helps keep him grounded, and the importance of having a sure and certain identity in an ever-changing world. Sean, to start off today's Profile podcast, I just wondered if you might be able to tell me a little bit about what it was like for you growing up. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in a Christian home? What was childhood years like for you?
Oh, gosh. So I grew up in East London, Forest Gate, Manor Park. So I've been an East End boy all my life. And to be fair, quite proud of the fact, to be honest with you.
I've never actually lived in the East End, as my husband regularly points out to me, but both my parents are from the East End. So I feel those roots quite strongly.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're strong. I didn't really grow up in a Christian home at all. My mum was a Christian. She, you know, she believed, you know, in the Lord and stuff. And, you know, but I wouldn't say I was brought up as a Christian. It's just occasionally we'd have kind of conversations and you know, and her, and she would kind of tell us about the Bible and, you know, bits and pieces, but nothing deep. And then I think we're the ages of, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, she sent us to, I think it was an old church that she used to go to when she was young. And me and my sister used to go to the Sunday school and we couldn't stand it. It wasn't something, it was like, oh, we have to get up to go to church. Oh, no, do you know what I mean? So she sent us to Sunday school or whatever. And, you know, so they weren't, you know, the, you know, fond memories, to be honest with you, you know, but a church, an old family church when she came over from Jamaica when she was a kid. Anyway, so, you know, that kind of stopped and whatever, and didn't think much of it, but I always kind of had a belief, you know, always believed, you know, in, you know, in the Lord, and always believed, you know, in the Bible and things like that. Anyway, so, you know, fast forward, you know, a few years, I started going to college and I was studying building construction. And a friend of mine, you know, used to sit next to Stephen. We used to sit down and we used to talk about all sorts of stuff, obviously not listening to the lecture at all. And he was a Christian. And, you know, this Jamaican Indian guy, one of my very, very good friends. Yeah, and he's a Christian. He goes, oh, Sean, do you believe in God? I said, yeah, I believe in God. Yeah, you know, I believe the Bible, you know. And he goes, oh, really? And he was quite surprised that I know that I kind of profess some kind of faith. You know, and I thought, well, you seem shocked. Because, well, you know, you kind of, you know, you love a little bit of a, you know, East End, you know. I know this is a bit of a cliche, but, you know, I wasn't afraid of confrontation. No, I'm not going to put it out there like I was, so, you know, but, you know, I'd get into a few scuffles and all that kind of good stuff. You know, just, it's an East End thing. I don't even know what to say.
You were 16, 17. It happens, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, so it's one of those things where he kind of was quite surprised that I was, you know, I had a bit of a faith to some degree. Anyway, so we started talking about stuff and he invited me down to his church. And I was like, nah, I'm not coming down, to your church. You know, I'm like, nah. Yeah, because I had this vision of, or this concept of Christians and Christianity, which, you know, they're kind of, you know, fuddy-duddy, wearing sandals with socks and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's just what my perception of Christianity was quite stiff. And I was like, nah, it's not for me, mate. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, but thanks for, you know, inviting me down. Anyway, so I think what happened was I got home and I was kind of thinking about it. And I thought, you know, let me just go down there and see what it's all about. I don't know what changed my mind. I have no idea. Anyway, so I got up in the morning and I said to my mum, yeah, I'm going to church. They looked at me like they were you can picture this thing. Everyone's around the dinner, breakfast table, and yeah, I kind of just stopped looking at me. And I said, yeah, I'm going to church. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. They were surprised, but not surprised, which I'll tell you about afterwards. And I walked in, and, you know, it was packed. I'd say, how many people? 600 people, maybe 500 people in the town of Ilford. And I walked in, and this man, Hughes, I'll never forget it. He greeted me with such enthusiasm, such love. It was such a warm welcome. And I was quite taken back by it, Emma, if I'm honest. I was like, oh, cool. Do you know what I mean? You know, because I was thinking, wait a minute, you know, this is a bit, but it felt so warm and genuine. And I walked in and I met Stephen and I think a few of his family members. And I walked in and I was looking, I was like, whoa. And because I said, this concept of church, now it was a concept of church, you know, like you said, it was, you know, I was really stiff and kind of fuddy-duddy, or, you know, you got the kind of clergy with their, you know, the dog collars and you're walking around with incense. And, you know, I don't know what I was imagining, but it wasn't what I imagined, you know. And they were singing these songs and it was a plethora of just multiculturalism. It was beautiful, you know. It was just a mixture of all different people, all different cultures. I mean, literally everyone that you can imagine was there. And I was like, and that took me back as well. I was like, whoa, okay. So it was just a smashing of my perceptions. And I sat down. And we, you know, and they're singing these songs, you know, lovely songs. And I was sitting there, I was kind of agitated. And I was like, I don't even know, you know, question, what am I doing here? This is mad, you know? And then, so we sat down and then this guy started to preach, you know, and up to now, I can't even remember what he was actually preaching on. I still can't even remember. And he started talking, you know, obviously about the Lord and, you know, salvation and what Jesus done on the cross. You know, I think he was talking about all that good stuff. But then it's almost like he was talking directly to me. And obviously I know now it's the Holy Spirit just kind of convicting and talking. And he's, you know, talking directly to me. And I was like, this is, man. I even nudged Stephen. I was like, mate. I said, what have you said to this guy about? Is this a bit of a conspiracy, man? You know, to get me to church, to convince me of, you know, what you guys are talking about. And he goes, you know, look, it's just, you know, it's just God speaking to you, Sean. It's just God. And I said, yeah, but this is detail. You know, this is like, you know, it's like, I felt like almost like, you know, like when you're in those rooms and everything just, everything blacks out and this light just goes on you. Do you know what I mean? You just kind of feel exposed. And I was like, man, this is crazy. So anyway, so, you know, there was an altar call to come up and give your life to the Lord. And I'll tell you, it was one of those strange kind of wrestling kind of moments where I'm like, you know, I believe in the Lord. And it had this internal dialogue, and you know, literally it was like, you know, you believe that, I believe in, of course I do, always have, always kind of, yeah, but you know, you're gonna have to change your life, and it's this and that, and it was all this kind of, and I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And Stephen goes, sure, do you want me to come up and walk up there and, you know, with you? And I said, no, if I'm going up there, I'm going by myself, I don't, no one coercing me, just don't talk to you. That was one of those things. So in the end, I got up, I went to the front, my heart was beating. I remember, you know, it's funny, I haven't spoke, you know, to my testimony for ages. And my heart was beating hard. And I went to the front, and he said, do you want to put his hands on me? He said, do you want to, you know, give your life to me? I was like, yeah, I do. I really do. And there's this thing in my mind, this voice in my head, you know, I just, you know, all of a sudden, I was faced with my mortality. You know, there will be a time when I come and I have to face the Lord, you know what I mean? And I've never really thought about that up until that point. And then this thing in my heart just said, you know, and I don't want to go to hell. I don't want to live in eternal damnation. I don't want none, you know, I don't want that. So, you know, and I said, well, you know what, then if you, you know, if you're real, you know what I mean? And, you know, you said, you know, I'm stepping up to the plate. And if you are who you say you are, then do what you said you're going to do. And then you're going to have to take it from here. Do you know what I mean? And it was literally that, you know, I gave my life to the Lord.
Wow.
You know, and I was really, obviously, really honest and sincere about that. And I sat down and as I walked out the church, I said, I'm never coming back here again. And I went home. And, you know, and it's just, it was, and I put it down to a very bizarre experience, but the Lord definitely touched me that day. And that was the beginning stages, yeah.
And did you go home and tell your parents? What did they say?
Help.
Were you in denial? You're like, no, that didn't really happen. I'm just going to pretend that.
Yeah, I kind of put it off as kind of like a blasé kind of, yeah, I went to church. Yeah, it was cool. It's fine. That kind of thing. And yeah, and I, not much was spoken about it after that. But it was later on because, like I said, it's almost like a point of challenge to me. I said, if you're real, and like you said you are, like this man says you are, and you're the real living God, then I know you reveal yourself to me. I know, because afterwards, and maybe, I don't know if it was a few weeks, a few days, I don't know, I can't remember. But I started having these bizarre dreams. These dreams, just like clear cloud. Now you got to understand, I'm the most, I like to think I'm the most level-headed, you know what I mean? Logical thinking, not super spiritual kind of guy. Logic, So I'm having these dreams. I'm thinking, what is this? And I think I remember one of the dreams was I was in this church, and it was just, it's, like an old ruin. And I remember sitting there, and I was like, in this dream, clear as day. And this being, this man standing in front of me, his back was broad. It was like he'd gone to the gym a million times. His back was broad, really big, broad back. I could tell he was powerful. And he had this sword that was just huge sword. And again, like I said, 17, 18, I still remember this dream. And these beings were coming towards, like, come, but it was a protection kind of stance. So all these things coming, and he was just slaying these things. It was like, vroom, vroom, like this. And I woke up. I was like, that was a mad dream. I went back and I said this to my mate Steve. I said, Steve, man, I don't know what you guys have done to me, but this is the kind of dream that I had. And it's just kind of incrementally, I started to kind of gradually going to church maybe once every month, and then it came to twice every month, and that's when it started to, the Lord started to really open up to me.
That's amazing. And you said earlier that your parents were kind of surprised and not surprised. So is there, what was going on there?
Yeah, well, what it was is that I remember my mum said to me, she goes, I wasn't surprised that you started to go into church. I was like, oh, you know what I mean? That, you kind of, you started to find faith and seek the Lord and all that. I was like, oh, why is that? She goes, well, when you were born, you were severely premature. And I was like, okay. She goes, and I thought you was going to die. And she goes, pray to the Lord. I said, well, listen, let him live, please. You know what I mean? He's yours. Oh, he's yours. You can have him. Just let him live. Never told me that before. So she goes, that's why I wasn't surprised that you kind of gravitated to him. So it's just a kind of proof, just how the Lord kind of keeps his promises almost, because apparently I was in a really bad way.
Nowadays, you are not doing building and construction, or you're not trained to be an architect. You're a West End actor, you're a musician. And I've read in other interviews you've done that that sort of change of direction in your life sounds like it came around sort of the same time while you were at college. You actually have a very famous friend who told you in no uncertain terms that you were to get your singing voice out. So how did that massive change come? Was it literally just Idris Elba told you you should go be a singer, so you did?
Well, what it was, like I said, it was that kind of thing where I was always singing to the point where my dad goes, Sean, his Jamaican accent, Sean, shut up, man. We are singing, bro. We are singing. So I was always singing, and I always had kind of aspirations to be a singer. It's just something that I didn't see as a viable option. So I was doing building construction, and and during that period, I was, obviously going to church, and I was starting to sing in church. And that's when I started to really find my voice, as it were, really started to understand singing and expression, and I think that was kind of getting really into. But I was singing all the time. I was doing bits of recording from I was the age of 13, doing backing vocals for my aunt and all sorts. But Idris, the nutter, he gave me the little kind of push and kick that I kind of needed, We was in the canteen, and I remember everyone's kind of doing it. It was like a scene out of Fame. That Fame back in the day, they kind of spontaneously just kind of erupt into music and singing. And I remember, so he's doing his thing, and I started singing and doing whatever. And then he goes, oh, sure, I didn't know you could sing like that. I was like, yeah, something I've always done. He goes, man, you should join us, man. You should definitely pursue that. And Idris, if anyone that knows Idris, is kind of the most charming, charismatic, positive person you'll ever meet. And that's no joke. And, you know, and he's just got a way about him that just kind of convinces you, listen, you can do whatever you want to do. And so I was like, yeah, you're right. Do you know what I mean? So I think it was the next year I joined the performing arts. And literally the rest is history.
Okay, so for people listening to the podcast today, you and I have never met before, but no. You do know my parents.
Yes, I do, yeah.
And I think it was probably not that long after that time, because I was away at university. And my dad used to have prayer meetings around our house. And there were a few occasions when somehow, I think probably through the Ilford Church connections, you ended up at my parents' houses at prayer meetings.
Yeah.
And so when I was talking to them about today and telling them that we were going to be chatting, my mum was regaling me with some stories. And she said that one of the things that she remembers the most about you, and I mean, let's face, this is probably going back 25 years, isn't it?
Yeah, at least.
You were just starting out in the industry.
Yeah.
And my mum says that one of the things she remembers most is your integrity and your passion for trying to make really good career decisions. And she said there would be weeks when you would come to their house at the prayer meeting and ask for the guys to pray for you, and you'd be trying to decide what jobs to take, and
yeah.
you'd be like super broke, and you'd be like, I'm not taking this job because I, you know, it doesn't feel right, it's not the right thing. And she said, you know, as a mum with kids that were sort of not much younger than you, like, she was always a bit like, oh, I really respect his integrity, but I actually hope he has got enough money to like eat this week. So I was just wondering if you might be able to talk to us a little bit about that, because obviously being in the arts or the creative industries of any sorts is, you know, there often isn't a steady paycheck, and you're in a lovely position now where you have got a very long-term job, which is great. But how did you manage that, especially when you were a young man, a relatively young Christian, you were trying to get breaks, and it sounds like you were very sort of sure about what you did and didn't want to do.
Yeah, I mean, oh gosh. Yeah, I mean, you know, I just... Our industry is, you know, perilous at times, you know, and so, you know, and also you kind of have to have a certain vision of where you want to go musically. You know, I knew kind of songs that I wanted to sing. I didn't, you know, didn't want to kind of compromise my, like I said, my integrity, you know, certain things obviously that I believe in, you know, musically and lyrically, and also, you know, and it was always about being true to myself, you know, just as an artist. You know, I'm not a hip hop artist. You know what I mean? I'm not going to care like I'm some kind of street rude boy. That's not kind of what I'm about now. So, you know, so my thing was always about just, you know, being true to myself and, you know, musically and everything else. But also, like I said, yeah, I remember I'd be skint. I mean, gosh, man. You know, literally skint. And so what I'd be doing, in between jobs and whatever, I'd be working on a building site because I had a few friends that kind of had their own building firms. So, you know, so I'd be on building sites and knocking down chimneys and, you know, brick laying and plasterboarding and, you know, it's doing all sorts, you know, just to kind of bring money in. But yeah, it was tough at times. And yeah, it was just that thing of picking the right jobs, you know, jobs that I wanted to do. And also, you know, whether, you know, but also, to be fair, you know, auditioning and, you know, just this getting nothing, you know, for long periods of time as well. So, you know, you did kind of question, gosh, am I doing the right thing? You know, but when I look back on it now, you know, I can't actually take any credit for my planning. You know, when people go, you know, how did you kind of steer your career? I didn't steer no career. You know what I mean? I can't even take credit for, you know, being the mastermind of my fate, you know. It's just when I look back, I kind of go, oh, I've had a career. You know, it's just that, you know, you walk through, you know, you literally step in each step and kind of go, okay, I'm auditioning for that, audition for that. Do I go on tour and, you know, do that? Or do I take that job in the West, which is a bit more stable, but this is going to be traveling? What do I do? You know, and so it was decisions I'd take when they arose, and you know, and like you said, I sought good counsel, wise counsel, and I look back and I go, yeah, I think the vast majority were good decisions that I made.
Are there any that you regret passing up?
Oh, I mean, they're what ifs, you know? Because you know, there was one time, I was doing a little mini tour in America, and then there's this A&R guy said, "Listen, you could be really big over here, but you'd have to spend, a good year, 2 years here to kind of really establish yourself." And I actually at the time couldn't actually do that because of commitments and this and that, and so they're just what ifs, and I said, "Oh gosh," and it was actually Idris that set that up actually, because I was doing some tours in Los Angeles and I was writing over there, and he set that up, and so A&R man came to see like a gig that I was doing, and he went there really well, and he goes, "Listen, you come there anytime you're ready, whatever." And I do some writing over there, and anytime but it never flew. I just couldn't do it, and it was just one of those things. But there are a few what ifs, but so I'm happy with the choices still.
Now we've a few months ago, my colleague Megan interviewed Shane Lynch off of Boyzone. He's very outspoken about his views about the music industry and how dark it can be at times. What's your experience of working in the music industry? Have you found that it is a dark place to be, or is it easy enough to surround yourself with the right people and do it in a way that's spiritually healthy?
Like anything, there's extremes, I think. I mean, I personally haven't experienced any of that kind of stuff. But I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. I'm just saying that I've never, personally experienced. But I think as you get older, you can, surround yourself with a good team. And like I said, in any industry, I think, it's down to the decisions that you make. Also, I think it boils down to how badly you want it. And I think that desperation is something that people can sniff a mile away and they can exploit that. It's one of those things where, how bad do you want it? And I know you hear that cliche all the time, how bad do you want it? And you just go for it and dinner. But I think how bad do you want it, but not to the detriment of yourself. What profit a man if he gains the world but loses his soul? So I just kind of I look at it like that. You kind of have to know who you are and what you're about, just and be sure of that, and then you get on with it. But you have to be fully armored up and know that there's a line that you won't go beyond. And I think that's with any industry, in any choice of life, in anything that you do.
Yeah, I think that's really good. It's interesting. I don't know if you follow the golf, but like last weekend was the US Masters, and Scottie Scheffler, who won it, is a very strong Christian. And a lot of the interviews that he did around winning, actually, that was exactly what came across. And a lot of the commentators and the pieces that were written after said, "Oh, what really comes across when he speaks to people is he loves golf, and he's obviously fiercely competitive." And he spoke about how, like, he wishes sometimes that he was less competitive because he feels really stiff on the morning of it and all this kind of stuff. And he's obviously a brilliant golfer
Oh,
and put a lot of time and effort into it. But he very clearly articulates all of the time in all of his interviews, this is not where my ultimate identity lies. This is not where my ultimate security lies. And it was interesting to see some of the, just secular normal journalists reflecting, oh, what comes across from him is that gives him a really healthy mindset. It enables him to be competitive and to be ambitious, but to not let that sort of just swamp him almost and be the thing that he lives for. And I wonder if it's the same for people like yourself in the music industry or the creative industries, where you have to be very ambitious, you've got to be out there, you've got to be maybe quite pushy sometimes, but not lose your sense of self in that, and not lose your sense of priority, knowing that actually it's God that comes first in all of those things.
I totally and 100% agree. The amount of times I've had conversations with people, and I hear, singers go, "Yeah, I'm a singer," and I hear people say, "I'm an actor," and their whole kind of whole being encompasses that kind of thing, that persona. And I've always kind of sat down with Christmas. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a singer. I mean, singing's what I do." And don't get me wrong about. I love it. I'm a singer through and through. It's what I do. The expression, the artistry, the feeling it gives me, the freedom it gives me emotionally and spiritually. But it's part of who I am, not what I am. And like you said, it's that thing of I'm extreme. Sometimes, oh, does my head in perfectionist when it comes to the art. And I'm very, very hard on myself. at the same time, I don't take myself too seriously, but I'm very hard on myself. So I totally understand where he's coming from and I totally agree. But it's not who I am, you know, and it's not the most important thing. You know, it's, it doesn't rule over everything. It's, you know, it's the singing is part of who I am, just like, you know, I'm a father and a husband. And, you know, these things make who Sean is, you know, a martial artist. And so, you know, so yeah, I totally agree with him. And I think when it becomes all consuming, that's when it becomes dangerous because you lose yourself, you become selfish, and you're putting that idol in front of everybody, including God, in front of your family, in, you know, your children, your wife, you know, it becomes all consuming. And that's when it becomes a dangerous thing. I must become this at all costs.
You've been playing Mustafa in The Lion King now in the West End for a very long time.
Yes.
16 years. And I know that makes you one of the sort of the longest running actors in a West End play, which is an amazing thing. And like you say, that probably gives you a certain different perspective now, as in you're not constantly looking for work and having to worry about that side of things. Does it give you a different perspective on things? Is there a risk that you, like, can you look back on the times when you were really reliant on God's provision and think, oh, there was some gold in that? Or is it much nicer to be able to not have to worry about that?
You know, I think as an actor, as a singer, as a, you know, you always worry about that.
Do you? It never goes away.
It's always one of those things where you know, I remember you know, people talk about recession, whatever, and I'm looking at them, and I'm like, I'm always in recession. Do you know what I mean? I'm always thinking about the next job or the next paycheck. Because, you know, as artists, we're kind of made and built that way. After a while, you kind of always have that in the back of your mind. You always kind of go, right, okay, put that away. Put that away financially, did it, because I never know what the next day, you know, what the next year is going to bring or whatever. And that's just the nature of our work. So I've always kept that ethos. I've always kept that that mindset. So it's kept me extremely humble. It's kept me always kind of relying and, you know, like I said, relying on God. Because for me, when that stops happening, or if that was to ever stop happening, No, because I don't actually understand. I don't know how people can live without him. I really don't. I usually say it tomorrow. I just don't know. I don't have a concept of how I could actually do it. You know, so, you know, he's always front and center, you know, regardless. And that kind of permeates then in the way how I treat people, how I interact with people, how I live my life, etc. You know, so. And that question, I'm always on him. Do you know what I mean? Because I don't know what the next year is going to bring. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm too scared to kind of even step out and go, right, I've done this, you know, 16 years and whatever. And also what I found as well is that it keeps the performance sharp. You know, like I said, I don't take it for granted. I love being where I am. I love doing what I'm doing. You know, I love working in the Lion King family. They're wonderful, wonderful company to work for. And just the cast is great. And it's just wonderful. You know, it just keeps me sharp, keeps me humble, keeps me grateful. That's the word I'm looking for. You know, it's always just an underlying gratitude that goes through that, you know.
And I mean, you know, potentially that's not an easy thing to hang on to when you're in a position like you're in, you know, and you've had a very successful career and you've performed on Jules Holland and you've had the likes of Elton John and Trevor Nelson bigging you up and promoting you, and you've toured with all these phenomenal stars. Is that the thing that keeps you grounded? Is it, you know, just going back to God and saying, like, you know, like you've expressed earlier, like you almost feel that this career has happened to you rather than...
Oh, all the time. I think, you know, if I have if you have an attitude of gratitude, then you always see, you know, the beauty and you know, in what you've been doing, you know. And I remember any time that it would this arrogance, but just full of yourself thing could come. I remember back in the day, I used to practice this thing where I kind of do my first show, started doing my first kind of live gigs. And, you know, people, you know, I couldn't believe that people would be coming to pay to come and watch me perform. It freaked me out. I'm like, it always freaks me out. Even now, still, I'm thinking, wow, you know? And especially with the live things with my band and songs that I've written and the brought albums, I'm like, wow. Anyway, and so, you know, I'd go on stage, and afterwards, I would come home, still kind of filled with what's going on, crazy kind of mad thing that's just happened. Oh, Sean, you're great. You're this, you're that. You sounded great tonight. The band were amazing. The reviews would be good occasionally. But, and then I'd sit there and then I'd come in, I don't know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would kind of purposely do something like wash the dishes. Do you know what I mean? And just kind of wash the dishes, just reflect on what happened, wash the dishes, put the dishes away, and kind of go, okay, right, cool, normality. You know what I mean? Mm. You know, you know, it's just Sean. It's all good, and yeah. It would kind of be back down and just kind of level me out a bit. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you know what? It was a good gig, but you know what? Don't get above your station, young man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was like a soft talk almost. And
that's,
you know,
that's a very good tip. I like that.
Yeah, you know, so yeah, be that kind of thing, just to kind of not get too big for my boots, kind of thing. And it was not anything anyone else would kind of put to me. It was just something that I kind of like to exercise. You know, even up to now, still.
Do you still manage to maintain within like the schedule of working in entertainment, having to perform, being on the stage? It's not an average 9 to 5, is it?
No.
How do you manage to find some kind of like church life balance in that? Do you get to go to church on a Sunday morning, or is that just something that isn't possible in your life?
Oh no, yeah, we go our service is at 10:30, and it's literally I have to rush out there by 10:45. Do you know what I mean? So I'm literally rushing every Sunday morning. I'm rushing, boom, and I wake up in the morning, but you know, after two shows on a Saturday, Sunday morning, and sometimes I'm just knackered. I'm knackered. And I would get up and go to church. And then there's sometimes the sermon is so good. Do you know what I mean? Pastor Simon, he smashes it. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, my eyes are heavy. And I'm like, Lord, I need to keep my eyes open, because I'm so tired. But every time without fail, and that's, you know, on occasion when I'm extremely tired, but without fail, I've come out of there and I'm invigorated, full of, you know what I mean, just like ready to go.
You obviously place a very high value on Sunday morning church, because lots of people skip church for a lot less. So
yeah.
It's obviously something that's very important to you.
Yeah, very important. It's, you know what it is? I love going to church on a Sunday. But also it's just that having that connection with other people, like-minded. And again, it's that thing of as well, just coming before the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and it's humbling. Because like I said, it's that theme that's been going for this last maybe year or so of gratitude. And every time I kind of focus on him and just kind of have the wonder of who he is, still my mind cannot conceive who he is and what he is. It humbles me. And that humbleness just, you know, then I look at myself and kind of go, you know what, boy, you're not all that, mate. And then it kind of, I start thinking about all these other things. You know, you're not as strong as you think you are. It's like, even though I like to think I'm this bad boy. But, you know, it just kind of just makes me realize, you know, what a man is. You know what I mean? Who you are in the sight of God. And, you know what I mean? And I kind of go, right, yes, I know. And then it just kind of, I thought to myself, I'm like, yes, this is who you are. You empower me. You inspire me. You infuse me. You give me that creative thing. It's all about you. Mm-hmm. And so I need that. You know, I literally need him, you know, so it's a thing of just like, yeah, going in to get my weekly plug in with other people of like mind, you know.
Just going back to sort of young Sean, he's just become a Christian and is at college and is just finding out probably who he is in the world. And as you said, you know, you're a bit of a East End rascal at the time. How did that play out for you? How did you learn to live in a different way? What impact did it have on your life and your attitude?
Oh gosh, that was long. It was difficult. Do you know what I mean? You know, I suppose because, like I said, the people I was knocking about with at the time, you know, we were typical East End boys, and I'm trying to put like a cliche or a stereotype, but you know, but how I grew up in this estate in London, East London, was kind of just what it is, you know. It was a matter of fact, you know, got myself in bits and pieces, bits of troubles, getting up to all sorts of stupidness. And it was all about bravado. It was all about front. It was all about what we thought was being a man and masculinity. And yeah, I was getting myself in trouble. And so, and in all sorts, fighting on the streets, all sorts. But when I said my good friends, my closest friends, I'm going to be a Christian now, and I found the Lord, the Lord's found me. They would look to me in shock, disbelief. Do you know what I mean? It was like, whoa. And to be fair, they were cool with it. I must admit, I don't know what they were talking about, behind closed doors, but they must have thought it was a strange thing. But my whole thinking started to change. My whole ethos started to change. It was a gradual process. Just kind of things that I was doing, I started to stop doing. I started to go to church more. So my circles changed a little bit as well. And the more I started to learn about the Lord, the more it fascinated me. And the more I'd kind of tell my friends. And, opportunity, we started to talk about deeper things that we'd never spoke about before. Started talking about, spiritual things and morality and, what I mean? And, that kind of thing, or where it comes from. So we started to get into this kind of deep talk about things. And, yeah, it's like opened up a lot of doors of conversation. But, but my life did start to change. And I kind of started, and there was a time when I started to take my faith a little bit more seriously. It's been a very gradual process.
Yeah. And I mean, and that is a lot of people's experience, isn't it? Especially if they do become a Christian. Well, I mean, even if you grew up in a Christian home, quite often there's that time when you become an older teenager or you go off to uni. And, it's just a tricky time, isn't it? I became a Christian when I was 12, but by the time I went to university, I quickly discovered that going out drinking and clubbing on a Saturday night didn't make for an easy get up and go to church on a Sunday morning. And for a couple of years, that didn't happen very much. And that impacts your faith, and that impacted my walk, and it impacted the decisions I made. And then you have to find your way back to that. For me, it was a gradual journey back towards faith in my 20s. So I'm always interested to hear people's stories about that, whether they, whatever age they became a Christian or whether they were raised in a Christian home, because I think it's really encouraging. I think sometimes there's that perception out there that, you become a Christian, a switch flicks and everything's perfect for the rest of your life. And that isn't most people's journey, is it?
Most people I've spoken to, it's not their journey, no.
And and I think it's really helpful, especially for young people to hear, the stories of people that have struggled through that and have found their way through and learned how to wrestle with God and how to grow in their faith, even if that is gradually and over years.
I wish someone had actually almost told me that, that this is kind of going to be the situation, you're going to be wrestling with him maybe for the rest of your life. And like you said, you're going to make decisions that are stupid, but he never lets go of you, and as long as you just kind of cling on to the hem of his garment, you're just holding on. And there's times I'm like, Lord, I don't care. I'm not letting go of you. I'm just not letting go, and I think, like I said, and it's always that decision. I'm like, Lord, I know what I'm about. I'm giving this to you. I'm holding on to you. You just have to drag me through this sometimes. And that's when you start really seeing the reality of God. It's not just a precept in your mind. It's not just, things, that he becomes really real, and you start seeing him manifest in your life. You start seeing that, oh my gosh, you had me there. It's only when you look back, kind of goes, oh my gosh, you had me completely there, at that point in my life. Didn't realize it at the time. It gives you a deeper faith and a deeper confidence,
Tell us a little bit about what it was like for you during COVID, because obviously as a West End actor, there's no getting away from the very real impact. How did that play out for you? What was that like?
Oh gosh, that was tough. That was tough. I mean, caning, working at God for, well, obviously being in this show for 16 years, but prior to that, other West End shows and everything else. So, just constantly working. There's only a period of time when I hadn't, in a small period of time when I hadn't worked. So I had this kind of enforced 18-month sabbatical. Was really difficult, Emma. It was really difficult because I think I've become a little bit of a workaholic. And I think that happens when you're an actor. You take jobs, come and go. I'll take that. You say yes before you think about it. Do you know what I mean? Because we know how hard it is to get work. So to have this enforced 18-month kind of or so sabbatical that, It freaked me out, man. It really freaked me out for a period. And then I realized, actually, you know what? This is actually quite good. I can spend time with my family, spend time with my little girl, because like I said, my hours are what they are. So it's just sometimes, I don't see her for a whole week, So it's just nice to kind of, first of all, have that downtime. First of all, getting over the anxiety of, oh my gosh, not working. And all of a sudden going, wait a minute, this is really nice. We can go for walks in the forest and, so, but yeah, that was a crazy time. But also, I kind of knew that we'd kind of go back. We didn't just know how long for. And also Lion King were very, kind of looked after us for a period of time as well. So that was good, and kind of just kept reassuring us that we were, when this is over, we're just going to get back to normal. So, so just kind of hold on to that, so it wasn't as daunting as it could have mostly been for other people, for me, in my family, but it was still kind of, there's still a kind of, wasn't quite sure about finances and this and that, and I know it was really tough for some people. For me, God was, just being really quite very good to us during that period. It was scary, don't get me wrong, it was very scary still, but it was very good. So I kind of just kind of took the positives from it and said, well, you know what, I'm just going to just use this time to spend with my family, eat loads of food and, get quite fat. I'll tell you another thing, is being left to your own thoughts was something that was quite apparent to me. Being bored and kind of going, getting a bit more creative, that helped. But just kind of left to your own thoughts and start thinking about the world and what's happening and where this is going. And you know what I mean? You start, like you said, you start thinking about your mortality because, it was a really bad time. So there was a lot of self-reflection. And then, then you start thinking about all the people that, you love and all your family members and how, and friends and just how much they mean to you. And, so I had some fantastic conversations during that period. I literally spoke to more or less everybody. All my good friends, Idris, who spoke to for hours, Mark, I'm just naming all these different names, but just I spoke to all my friends, during that time. And I realized just how much what they mean to me, you know what I mean? And literally just how much I love them. And I did tell them, I said, listen, I don't care. You know what I mean? I love you. And you know what I mean? You mean the world to me. And but and that kind of a lot of that came out. And up to now, still not ashamed of that. And you know what I mean? I do love them guys, man, all of them.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because like, you grow up and sometimes you grow away physically from old friends. You don't live nearby to each other. And in the business of life, it does become really hard to stay in touch with friends and family that are no longer around the corner. But then suddenly when everyone's at home all the time, you've got loads of time. You heard all those brilliant stories, didn't you, of like families doing quiz nights on Zoom or My husband like set up a surprise call for me on my birthday because we couldn't go out and we were all stuck inside. But he set up a surprise call for me with all my like best friends from university and just said, oh, go upstairs, there's something else. And they were all on Zoom waiting for me and like, things like that. And yeah, you're right. It really does make you appreciate the people in your life and it did give everybody a chance, the best part of that. And there was lots of pain and lots of hard stuff as well. But the best part was, it did provide a lot of people with a chance to take a hard look at their lives and work out what was important to them again, didn't it?
And that's what it's like you said, it's the little things as well. Like you said, just walking in the forest. I mean, I appreciated that so much, just, that, and like you said, you look at all of them, you think, I'm really appreciating life for what it is, because like I said, we rush through life so quickly. And so when you have to stop and take stock, you kind of go, right, okay. And I've actually held on to that a little bit as well.
So as Christians, sometimes the creative industries get a bit of a bad rap, or we for a young person who's considering a career in music or in theatre or things like that, sometimes the perception is, oh, that's going to be a really tough place to be a Christian. Like, are you sure you want to go after that? What would your advice be to a young person who has a faith and who aspires to a career in performing arts?
Gosh, this is kind of twofold in a way, really, because, spiritually, I would say, or, like I say to anybody, just know who you are, just, know who you are in the Lord and, allow your faith to just ground you, because it's only then you kind of appreciate it, appreciate the art, because, and also, I've always said, you know, don't get too carried away. Don't get swept away with it all, you know, and, you know, don't believe the hype. You know, it's, you know, all those kind of cliche kind of things. And if you kind of just focus on the art form and where it comes from and where your inspiration lies, you know, and who's driving you, you know, because I've realized, me personally, you know, when I've kind of just let go of myself spiritually and emotionally and become vulnerable with my king, when it comes to performing, that's when the true beauty comes out. It's not about you. It never is. But and I think, let me, I'm talking in circles, but I think to be a real performer of integrity, it's never about you. It never has been about you. You know, I go up on the stage and I see, regardless of what I'm doing, whether it's on Lion King stage or theatre or live gigging or whatever, it's always about the audience. They've paid big money, you know, to come and see, and it's about them. And so once the mindset is that, and not that, oh, I'm just this brilliant kind of whatever, then it becomes something else. Your performance becomes something else. So young people of you know, Christians that got going into to it, just remember that who your gift comes from, where your gift lies, you know, and celebrate that. Celebrate the true integrity of how, you know, how what God has given you. That keeps you grounded. It keeps you humble. It almost keeps you slightly fearful. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't want to step away from that. And, you know, so that's kind of, it's like, so it's two kind of mixed into one almost. You know, remember that it's almost a service, and also remember where your talent lies. And then it branches off. Then you owe it to yourself. You owe it to God. You owe it to people to be the best that you can be. You owe it to, you know, you owe it to really study your art, study your craft, you know, and have integrity.
And
You know.
how do you stay away from the bad sides and the temptations of the industry? You hear so many stories, don't you, of musicians, actors, people with fame that sort of get swept up in the drink, the drugs, the sex, you know, that everything's there on a plate. How do you keep your own walk straight?
Gosh, I think family, friends, people are not afraid to tell you the truth. You know, keep the real people around you. I have a few friends around me that men that I can kind of talk to, and they can kind of just tell me how it is, you know. And you need those guys. You need the, you know. And I'm, like I said, I'm going to talk in an old school kind of way, but the guys that are willing to die and fight for you, you know, whether it's spiritually or physical, you know. And I've got a few friends that I kind of go, yeah, they can call me up for anything, and I'm like, yeah, I'm there. But you need those guys around you that are going to go, Sean, what's the matter with you? You know, and that old kind of Cockney, what's the matter with you, man? You need to fix up, bro. This is not who you are. This is not what you're about. You know what I mean? And keep you in check. And it's that, you know. So I have a core of friends around me that I'm accountable to, and likewise, you know, they're accountable to myself. And I think that's very important, because, you know, so it's that thing of, if you kind of start going left or going a bit right, they kind of just tell you how it is, and you need those guys in your life, you know.
Would you recommend it as a career?
Yes and no.
I'd love to see you hesitating there.
It's yes and no, because it's not for everybody. You know, you have to have a really thick skin. You know, you have to be quite strong, really. You know, because this industry is not for wimps. It really isn't. It's not for the weak-hearted. The rejection is constant. You know, you're constantly doubting yourself, constantly striving for perfection. Sometimes rejection just kind of break people down, you know. And there's times in my life that I've said, right, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. This is too hard. You know, and I've always kind of compared it to maybe being, I don't know, in different professions, a doctor or a lawyer or a surgeon, you know, a bricklayer, whatever. The longer you do it, you know what I mean, the more kind of kudos and respect is on your name. In our profession, it's not, you know, it's not that way here, you know, not really. You know, so if you've got, and also the other thing I'm missing out big is the talent. You know, let's not beat around the bush here. You know, I see a lot of things, you know, I see a lot of kind of the loads of talent shows and this and that. And, you know, people, you know, there's a lot of people that have good voices, but there's more that goes with that. There's a confidence that needs to come with that. You know, people call it the X factor, whatever you want to call it, or it. there's a confidence, there's a I don't know, a bravado, a character, a self assurance, self confidence, self belief, whatever you want to call, like, mix that into the bowl.
The Idris Elba charm and charisma.
Yes, you know, it is that, and also a drive that isn't an all-consuming and self-destructive. You know, there's a mix of all of that, and that has to be a balance. So do I recommend it to everybody? No. But if it's clear and glaring that someone has a real talent, you know, and it kind of, you just can't help it, you know what I mean? You're singing every day, you're acting every day, you dream about it every day, and the talent is evident, I'd say run with it, man. Go for it. You know, just don't let it consume you like anything else in life.
That was Shauna Scoffrey speaking to me, Emma Fowle, here on Premier Christian Radio. We hope you enjoyed this interview. For hundreds more conversations just like this one, you can download The Profile as a podcast. Just search for The Profile wherever you normally get your podcast from, or visit premier.plus/The Profile.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.